Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Ollie.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast.
There are just 10 games remaining of the Premier League season. 54 days worth of twists and turns to find out who wins what and who finishes where as the campaign comes to a close. Or will the 19th of May really be the deciding day after all? Nottingham Forest have announced they've lodged an appeal against their 4-point deduction for breaching the Premier League's profitability and sustainability rules, and the suggestions are that they might not find out whether that appeal is successful until after the season is over. So what happens then? Only time will tell, and there isn't much of it. And speaking of time, some of the greatest Premier League players of all time have been inducted into the Hall of Fame in recent years. Ashley Cole, the latest, as we discussed on yesterday's podcast. But who should join him in the class of 2024? Campbell, Carrick or Cole? Fabregas, Ferdinand or Fowler? We'll discuss that on today's episode of Football Social Daily, the award-winning Premier League podcast. My name's Niall McCorn. I guess you could call me the neutral member of this three-man squad, which also includes Newcastle fan Marley Anderson and Man United fan Joel Tudor. Morning, fellas.
Neutral?
You might be neutral, but you still manage to crowbar Portsmouth in at every opportunity, though. So
took the words right out of my mouth, Marley.
I'm a neutral.
You've got allegiances. That does not make you neutral at all. Because even whenever I talk about Man United, you always have to bring up 2008 at some point all the time.
Yeah, and then any time we bring up Newcastle, I mention how we've won a trophy more recently than them, so it's fair game.
I was going to say, it's usually no Pamaro screamer against us at St James's back in the day.
That's been my favourite one recently, but I think we'll revert back to the lack of major trophy for a number of years.
That's true.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, by the way. If you've never joined us before, the three of us go through the big Premier League news and opinion of the day, and the news hasn't really gotten much bigger this season than the points deductions for Everton in November and more recently for Nottingham Forest. Everton lodged an appeal against their initial 10-point deduction. They were gifted 4 points back, so that deduction now stands at 6 points, whereas Nottingham Forest were initially docked 4. Now Forest have appealed against that 4-point deduction. When they released their statement a couple of weeks ago when this points deduction was first announced, they didn't mention the word appeal, and there were some suggestions, Marley, that actually the fact that Forest were docked 4 points and not 6 was because they decided just to take their punishment on the chin. We've also seen reports surface in the newspapers saying that Forest are a little bit cautious about appealing the decision in case it backfires and they end up being given more points as a penalty than they already have. But yesterday, Forest released a statement saying, we're going to appeal our 4-point deduction and we have no further comment at this time. Are you surprised that they've appealed it? Or do you think that this was inevitable, that they were going to say, hang on a sec, we're not happy about this?
I'm surprised in a way because I thought they took the medicine of the reduced penalty. You know, it was meant to be 6 and now it's 4. And I thought they went, yeah, all right, you know, sod it, we'll take that. And I thought that was the appeal, like you said, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we'll draw a line under it there and we'll try and fight these 4 points on the pitch type of thing and try and min, like, cover that gap by winning a game and drawing a game and then you sort of level. But I'm not surprised because Marinakis strikes me as the type of character who will try and wangle his way out of absolutely anything and the type of character that will take a chance and try his hand. You know, the guy signed 30 players. He took a gamble at most of them. He seems to be obsessed with signing goalkeepers every transfer window. He signed about 5 goalies in the last year. So it's, I feel like someone's had a word with him and said, you know what, we could appeal. Like, he's the type of guy to sort of go into a casino with 5 grand and just stick it all on red and or like hope that it's red and not black on the roulette wheel. Like, it could backfire this. It really could, but I don't know. I think they're expecting something similar to the Everton case. I'd be wary of that if I was them, just because Everton thought, you know, they were going to get, you know, a lesser punishment in the first place. And I feel like Forest's punishment is different from Everton's in a way where I almost think you should almost take it. But, you know, I just feel like he's one of these characters who will take a chance and say, oh, well, you know, we've been hard done by or whatever, but we'll have to wait and see what happens. But yeah, it's a risk. But Marinakis is a gambler, like I'm saying.
I think it's interesting the 2 points handed back to Forest for what was described as mitigation when the details about the PSR breach and the case came out. The way I saw it was, as you mentioned, it was Forest taking the punishment on the chin and saying, we won't appeal if you give us a less harsh punishment in the first place. Now they've decided that they are going to appeal. Maybe they've taken some time to think about that. But in terms of the remaining fixtures of the Premier League season, because this is where I'm wondering why this decision has been made, Joel. You see Forest at the moment, they are a point below Luton on 21 points and they are in 18th place. It's between Luton and Forest for that final relegation place at the moment. Now, obviously, things can change quickly in the Premier League. I'm just looking at Nottingham Forest's final 9 fixtures of the Premier League season. Bearing in mind they're 1 point and 1 place away from safety. Of their 9 games, only 3 of them are against so-called Big Six sides. Tottenham, Manchester City and Chelsea. 2 of those games are at home, the City and Chelsea games. Those 2 games are at the City ground. If you look at their other fixtures, they've got Palace, Fulham, Wolves, Everton, Sheffield United and Burnley in the other fixtures. Now, if you're a team who are 1 point away from safety, and 6 of your 9 games are against those teams, including the ones around you like Everton and Burnley on the final day, Marley's point about them appealing the decision being quite a big risk looks even more of a risk now because they're not that far away from safety and they've got some massive games to play against teams that they can be hopeful of winning against.
It's a bit of an uncertain situation, this, because like we know, if they are to appeal, then the process has to be done before the 24th of May. And I know we all talk about those cliches of it's not over till it's over, it's not over till it's mathematically impossible. But in this situation, they actually are all unfounded and not true because they could find themselves in a situation where on the final day of the season, when they have to play Burnley, they beat Burnley. And let's say Burnley are only 1 point ahead of them at the time and the Forest go to 2 points ahead. They could find that after that victory at Turf Moor, potentially, they still go down because 4 days later, the independent panel find that they deserved the right points or they get more points deducted off them. So at the moment, it's a bit of a strange situation for them because regardless of the results, if Burnley or Everton are within touching distance of them come the end of the season is actually a pretty dangerous situation regardless. Even if they're 2-3 points ahead of them and they feel like they quite have a comfortable margin, the outcome of this case could still dictate what happens to them by the 24th of May. So right now, it truly isn't over, not until the final whistle, but until the gavel goes down in the court case, which is incredible.
Absolutely, because as you mentioned, Joel, because Forest have appealed, the deadline, the latest that we can find out a verdict or a result of this appeal, Marley, is the 24th of May. That's 5 days after the Premier League season has finished. 5 days after the final whistle is blown on the final round of fixtures and the final ball has been kicked, which normally is the conclusion of proceedings. Someone lifts a trophy, someone cries in the stands, that's it. The Premier League season is over, everyone's finished where they've finished, everything is decided. This season, that might not be the case. And we've discussed that a few times on this podcast, and we've spoken about Forest and their points deductions. We've spoken about how if they appeal, the latest that the appeal can be concluded is that 24th of May deadline. The final game is the 19th of May. So you can see there's that 5 day lag. Is it a case of getting this sorted as soon as possible? Because for the integrity of the Premier League, which has been called into question a hell of a lot this season, it's a real mess. They need to get this, I wouldn't even say before the final game of the season, they need to get this ironed out within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's just a mess. You know, you're going to get, you know, we all look forward to that, like, that match of the day on the final day, don't we? Where they edit it cleverly and, you know, it could be a three-way battle for the title this year with Liverpool, Arsenal and Man City all going for it. And then, you know, what are we going to have? We're going to have a match of the day extra when on the Friday when the court case comes in. It's just a bunch of blokes dressed in the shirts watching a screen in a pub or something like that and waiting for the notification to come through that Forest have been, you know, deducted 6 points and they've gone down when they thought they'd won on the Sunday previous, right? It just doesn't make sense. But the Premier League have completely made a mess of this. They probably made a mess of the financial situation of the Premier League. You probably trace it back 32 years from when the Premier League started, but certainly in the last few years where money has just gone to a new level. You know, they've tried to get the house in order and they've burnt it down in the process. Because nothing works. This doesn't work for anyone. It ruins the spectacle of the game. It takes away the emotion of the game. It takes away the sporting integrity. I mean, there's the other way to look at it of how the hell are Nottingham Forest meant to compete if they're not allowed to spend money when their financials are fine? Because, I mean, if they go down, they're going to get saved by parachute payments anyway. So the future, the PSL was brought in to safeguard clubs against being a Bury or being a Portsmouth or being a Reading and stopping bell-end owners, basically, and ruining clubs. And this isn't what it's for. It's not, oh, Forest spent 3 million more than they meant to, so they've got to sell Morgan Gibbs-White in the future. Like, it just ends their chances of competing.
But how far back do we take this? Because I understand what you're saying and I agree with 99% of what you're saying, but there's 1% of me which says, if the Premier League actually had a better owners and directors test in the first place, where they were more rigorous with the people who could buy clubs and be savvy with how they run their football clubs, and that just isn't the case. I mean, how far back do you want to go?
Probably to when Blackburn won it with Jack Walker's millions.
Exactly, and then you're talking 30 years plus and it's just getting ridiculous. I saw an article this week which mentioned that Chelsea could be punished for some of the financial irregularities during the Abramovich era. We lost the FA Cup final to Chelsea in 2010, right? What are they going to do? Give Portsmouth the FA Cup? We lost the match. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Do you know what I mean?
Open top bus parade round Portsea Island with a bunch of 45-year-olds like Matty Taylor and Ben Jarney dragged back over.
Frederick Pickyon and Aruna Dindan on the top of the bus. I mean, I'd pay to see that, to be perfectly honest. But do you see my point? It's ridiculous. What happens then, like with Manchester City's charges, which we won't go into now because it's far more complex and that won't be heard till the autumn. Let's say they're stripped of all of their Premier League titles and their FA Cups and their League Cups over the last 10 years. Where do they go? Because of the nature of football and the time constraints and limitations around the game, You know, you can't have a situation where teams are waiting until after the season to figure it out. This has to be sorted out now. The reason all of the games kick off at the same time on the final day of the season, Joel, is because of sporting integrity. Well, what's the sporting integrity in Luton and Nottingham Forest playing their final games of the season, but not knowing for another 4 days whether they're up or down? And even the week before, the fixtures the week before and the week before that and the week before that, when it gets really tight and we're firmly into the running and there is a handful of games to go, teams need to know what they're competing for because it changes the pressure of an elite sporting environment. And this case cannot be allowed to wait until after the season is done. It just can't. This appeal needs to be heard as soon as possible.
I mean, doping is a kind of general term. It doesn't have to be just in terms of, you know, taking a supplement which benefits you. Doping can be in so many forms in sports. And if you look at, for example, the Calciopoli scandal in Italy in the early 2000s, they were still absolutely banished in terms of, regardless of how big you are, Milan, Juventus, regardless of how big they are as clubs, they still got massively punished because they tried to gain a competitive advantage under the books. And then with Manchester City, you kind of look at that case and think, well, is it the fault of the Premier League for allowing them to get away with this? Or is it the fault of Manchester City for breaking the rules underhanded? Of course, right now, we don't know what the outcome of that's going to be. But if it's a case that they've gained a competitive advantage through underhand financial doping, of course, they have to slam the hammer on them. I don't care how many titles they've got or how bad it makes the Premier League look. Look at what has happened in other sports or in our own sport. Serie A did not care that Juventus are a Juventus. You have to set a precedent for this kind of thing. And that's why I think
they did with Everton, but they set the precedent in the wrong way by docking them 10 points. And I think the term sporting advantage is really intriguing because Forest had the option to comply with PSR rules. If they had sold Brennan Johnson to Atletico Madrid before the 30th of June, they decided not to do that. They waited until the transfer deadline day, which was the 1st of September, sold him to Spurs for, I think, 47. So they've made between £5 and £7 million more than what they would have made 2 months previously. Had they sold Brennan Johnson 2 months previously, they would have been in line with PSR rules and they wouldn't have a points deduction. So in terms of sporting advantage, who's actually gaining a sporting advantage here? Is it Everton, who have spent too much money, absolutely spent too much money, and have rightly been punished, but there's question marks over whether the money was used to finance their new stadium and interest repayments on the stadium, or Forest, who kept hold of their best player for two more months when they should have sold him before the deadline and fallen in line with the rules? Who's gaining a sporting advantage here? Marley mentions about Forest needing to compete. The way you compete is not by signing 30 players for £250 million. That's not how you do it. And that's the problem we've got. We've got these rules that were voted for by the Premier League clubs. Now, Forest weren't a Premier League club at the time, but they should have been aware of the rules and they should have fallen in line. So I have sympathy for the supporters who have no control over this. Massive sympathy for the Forest fans who have waited 2 decades to get back into the Premier League. And finally, they get back into the Premier League and those above board at the club have messed things up for them. And they can be back in the Championship after 2 seasons. Feel massively sorry for the fans. Do I feel sorry for Nottingham Forest Football Club, the organisation? I don't think I do. And I feel the same with Everton because they could have done more things to fall in line with the rules. And yes, the rules have their issues and they're a little bit crap. And this is not what we want to be talking about on a daily basis on the podcast. But the term sporting advantage, I'm not sure whether that's a term that kind of gets thrown around just because someone feels like they're being treated unfairly.
But I mean, it is an advantage to them two teams because if you look at the other 18 teams, namely Wolves, they had to sell their star assets just to comply with those rules. So if you want to look at it from that perspective, absolutely they gain an advantage because as flawed as the rules are, whatever we deem them as, they managed to keep Brennan Johnson, who was an asset that should have been sold to comply with those rules because they misjudged the finances and they were naive in thinking that the Premier League weren't going to be as harsh as they have been. Whereas you look at Wolves, and I feel so sorry for them in a sense because they're probably looking at these two clubs and thinking, you know what, it's right that they got a points deduction because we could have had Ruben Neves still in our midfield, we could have had Mateus Nunes in our midfield still, and we'd be probably competing even further up the table. And yet Gary O'Neill's got his hands behind his back tied because the club are in such a financial tight grip because of these rules and maybe mismanagement of funds. I don't really know the situation at their club, but you look at Everton and Nottingham Forest. I think they thought that they could get away with murder. I think
they've called the Premier League's bluff and it's backfired.
100%. I've always maintained they deserve punishment because these are the rules. And if you want to operate under this umbrella of rules that the Premier League have put in, you have to operate under them, regardless of how harsh they are. We've all been pretty big advocates, though, me personally, that it needs to remove the ambiguity of the rules itself. I mean, you just going through that list there, Niall, of, oh, we need to wait until June the 30th to then sell someone so then it balances the books. Just bring in a European-style system. 75% of your revenue, so you know exactly where you're at the end of every single summer. I genuinely don't understand how hard that is. Is it just this like stiff upper lip of the Premier League thinking we can do everything better than everyone else, like they've done with the technology, like they've done with the Hawkeye and all that kind of thing? Do they want to do things their way because they're the golden standard of Europe? I don't know.
You mentioned setting a precedent earlier on in the podcast, and the precedent that has been set over the years when it comes to breaching these kind of rules, not these specific PSR regulations, but financial rules in general, has been a fine or a transfer embargo. And actually, clubs would much rather that than a points deduction. Because if you hit clubs where it hurts with a sporting punishment of taking points away, that pisses the fans off. A transfer embargo, I think most supporters can deal with. But that pisses the fans off when you take away points from the team.
100%.
And the team could be punished for it.
These guys know how much these clubs are earning, right?
Exactly, which is why I think you're right about them calling the Premier League's bluff and just saying, we'll happily take an embargo or a fine.
So they know, if we give them 60 million fine, my God, you're part of our system. We know how much money you're getting from us. This is a drop in the ocean. We saw it with Paris Saint-Germain when they got fined. I think it was 50 million euros from UEFA for breaching FFP when it first came in. Do you think Al Khelaifi was looking at thinking, oh my God, please do not fine us 50 million. However are we going to cope? He thought that is the best case scenario because now we've got all these players. We pay a 50 mil fine, go again, and we'll go sign the same players again. Points deductions are the only way you will ever hurt a club because it potentially ruins their season and their future prospects.
I'm really glad you brought that up. The Manchester City case has been used as this kind of elephant in the room when it comes to the situations with Forest and Everton. And every time on the podcast, I say the City case is different. Not all of their 115 charges are financial charges. The difference between Forest and Everton's cases and the Manchester City case is all of this financial information is public information. All you need to do is a quick Google search and you can find Everton's accounts for the last 3 years. You can find Forest's accounts for the last 3 years. Do some quick calculations and figure out a club is losing too much money. The difference with Manchester City is they have been accused of concealing financial information, hiding statistics that should be in the public domain. That's the difference. And that is why the City case is far more complex than these Everton and Forest cases. And there are some great people on Twitter, including Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast, who we've had on Football Social Daily before, who goes through club accounts and can kind of give you a bit of an overview of what it means for a specific club in terms of their financial positioning. But the City case, they are accused of concealing information. So there is a far more serious accusation at play with Manchester City's case than these Forest and Everton cases. So if you are one of these people that listens to Football Social Daily regularly and you wonder why we get stuck into Everton and Forest and maybe not so much Manchester City, that's the reason why. City have been accused of something other than just breaching financial rules. They've been accused of something far more serious, which is why I think when it gets to the autumn and that City case is finally heard, we could be in a bigger mess in terms of the perception of the Premier League than we have been this season. And I think that will take some doing with the way things have gone this campaign so far. Next, we're going to talk about the Premier League Hall of Fame. But before we do, Forest have appealed their 4-point deduction. How do you see it going, lads? Do you think that they'll get any joy in terms of being given points back, Marley? Or do you think it will stay the same? Or maybe, do you think it could even get worse for them?
I think it'll stay the same. I think I don't know why anything could happen. I am just guessing. But I feel like the 2 points they've already been given back would be the mitigation type thing. It's already been given back. And I know it's a separate body, etc. But I feel like they might just look at it and say, you know what, for the sporting integrity of the league, we're not going to give you two extra points and send you down, and we're not going to reduce it to 1 point and send another team down, because I feel like an independent body for the appeal process might look at this whole thing and say, well, this is a mess anyway, so we're going to minimise the mess by leaving it at 4 points, which you've known since, you know, mid-March or end of April or whatever it may have been, and then leave it as it is, so at least we've got something where everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah, I probably agree, to be honest, considering the Premier League thought that it was 70% higher than Everton's breach. I think this is the best they're going to get. I'd rather just, for them, nip it in the bud now, accept it. I mean, it's in their hands still with the remaining fixtures. They've got to play Burnley, Sheffield United. You've got to deal with the mess, the cards that you've been given, unfortunately.
Well, Nottingham Forest have appealed their 4-point punishment issued by the Premier League for breaching profitability and sustainability rules. Full stop on that section of Football Social Daily. Finally, relax in your chair, wherever you may be listening to this podcast. Breathe out a sigh of relaxation, because next we're going to talk about the more exciting stuff, which is who deserves to be in the Premier League Hall of Fame. Yesterday, Ashley Cole, we all agreed, all three of us, he's probably the best left back, not just to play in the Premier League, but the best left back that England have ever produced. He is guaranteed a spot in the 2024 Premier League Hall of Fame. Who else will be joining him? We'll run through some of the big names nominated next on Football Social Daily.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Football Social Daily, the award-winning Premier League podcast. We're not afraid to get stuck into the big topics when it comes to the top flight of English football. There's been a lot of talk this season about profit and sustainability rules. Everton and Forest have dominated the news agenda on this podcast for what feels like the whole season. So it's nice that we can actually talk about something that isn't related to football finances. And that's where we're going to go now, because the Premier League Hall of Fame is back for another season. I think it's its fourth year now after it was created in 2020, I think, during the pandemic. The first inductees were the likes of Sir Alex Ferguson and Alan Shearer and Thierry Henry. Yesterday, the first member of the 2024 Premier League Hall of Fame class was inducted, and that was Ashley Cole. We all said that he's well deserving of the honour, being one of the best left backs that the league and England has ever seen. But who should join him? Only two legends can sit alongside Cole in this year's class of inductees. I'm not sure whether you boys have seen the shortlist.
Yeah, it's in front of me right now.
I've not seen much.
Okay, so I don't want to go through each player individually, Marley, because we will be here for ages describing who deserves it and why they deserve it or why they don't deserve it. But I'll read through all of the names now. Those 15 nominees are Sol Campbell, Michael Carrick, Andrew Cole, Jermaine Defoe, Cesc Fabregas, Michael Owen, Gary Neville, Eden Hazard, Robbie Fowler and Les Ferdinand, David Silva, John Terry, Yaya Toure, Edwin van der Sar and Nemanja Vidic. Only two of those players are going to be inducted alongside Ashley Cole. Joel, you said you've got some opinions on this. Make your case for which two legends should go into the 2024 Hall of Fame class alongside Cole.
I think first and foremost, probably the most underrated striker in Premier League history. 187 goals, none of them were penalties, by the way. Andy Cole. How the hell has he not even been putting it beforehand? He's been part of such huge teams, namely the treble winning side. 187 goals without penalties. Do you understand how crazy that is to achieve? And yet he's never talked about alongside Rooney or Aguero or Kane or anyone of that kind. He's literally just kind of forgotten about, like the forgotten man. And I hate that because he was so good. I mean, he was a little bit before my time, so I don't remember his peak. But from what I've been told from like my parents and people who grew up around him and seeing clips of him, I just think, how on earth did this guy just not being reveled more?
I've always wondered why he didn't take penalties. Because if you think of the clubs he was at, yes, there were good players who may have taken a penalty ahead of him. But he's also played for some smaller clubs where you'd think he's nailed on to be the penalty taker. Maybe he just didn't like taking penalties or he didn't feel confident. But that's a strange thing for someone who scored 187 Premier League goals to have never taken a penalty. It's a great achievement, by the way. You're absolutely right. And you should 100% pour loads of emphasis on the fact that he scored that many goals without scoring one from 12 yards on the spot. But I always think it's a bit strange why someone who's that prolific in front of goal decided he didn't ever want to take one.
So I was just reading an interview that he did with a podcast, and he said that, and I quote, "My mentality was, if I couldn't score goals from open play, then I'm not good enough." And I always laugh when people tell me about the fact that I get flack for not taking penalties, but I'm very proud of what I achieved, and people don't want to talk more about what I achieved after taking no penalties, so I can't help it.
I find that strange, Joe. I think that's nonsense, to be honest. Read that first sentence again. The second half of what he said, absolutely agree with. I'm proud of what I achieved, scoring so many goals that weren't from the penalty spot. But the first bit,
that my mentality was, if I couldn't score goals from open play, then I'm not good enough.
That's rubbish, though. He scored 187 goals from open play. I think everyone would have known by the time he had scored 50 that he was more than good enough to score goals from open play. I don't understand that. He's passing up the opportunity. Let's say he had 20 penalties. That would put him above Harry Kane.
Yeah, literally, he'd be so close to Shearer's record. That's why. Yeah, his reasoning, maybe he felt nervous from taking penalties that he doesn't want to say. Maybe he didn't want the responsibility and he preferred the fact that he was just more of an instinctive striker. I don't know, because, you know, penalties, you have to have a bit of balls to take penalties for your team, you have to say. But yeah, that's his reasoning. But aside from that, I mean, what an impressive record. 187 goals, no penalties. For a striker as well, is pretty unheard of in this day and age. So yeah, I think he 100% deserves to be there.
I'm totally with you. Andrew Cole does deserve a place in the Premier League Hall of Fame. And actually, he's one of only a handful of players who have played for Manchester United, Newcastle United and Portsmouth. He's played for all three of our clubs, which is very rare.
When did he play for Portsmouth?
When he got crap at the end.
Oh. Yeah, when he was old and his knees were gone.
When he was considering taking penalties.
Yeah, about 2005 or something like that, when we were in, you know, the great escape years, scrapping to stay in the Premier League. But at Manchester United, he's remembered for winning the treble. At Newcastle, Marley, he's remembered for being part of that amazing entertainers side.
I think he was slightly before the entertainers side. We sold him to Man United. I think it was 94, 95, we sold him for a British record fee. I think it was £7.5 million, I think it was. And with that money, we signed Alan Shearer like a year later, I think. I don't know, something about the black and white stripes just make you score an incredible amount of goals. I think we got him from I think we got him for Bristol City or something like that. For a decent fee as well. Like, I think 1.25 million is in my head, something like that, which I think was up there with as much as anyone had paid. I think that might be a British record as well. So he scored tons of goals. I think he got 40 odd in a season. And when Man United, I think when Dion Dublin, who was playing for Man United, I think he broke his leg or something, and they needed a new striker, and they went for the best in class, which was Andy Cole at the time. But he was incredible player, very underrated. I think that's mostly comes from the fact that he keeps himself to himself now. You don't hear much from him. For example, you see Shearer on Match of the Day and punditry and podcasts and stuff like that. You don't see Andy Cole doing much in terms of media work. And through his career, he was quite reserved, kept himself to himself. Famously hated Teddy Sheringham, didn't he? Apparently, one of the best strike partnerships Man United have ever had, and they didn't bloody like each other. So that was a weird one. But quality player. Deserves, from that list of maybes, I think he's clear for me. I think he's had a better career than some of the others. Michael Owen, for example. I just think the longevity of Cole. The only thing that won't get him in now is the fact that it was the earlier stages of the Premier League, rather than now, where people go, Yaya Toure was incredible, so get him in.
Well, I think we can all agree that even though, as Joel says, Andrew Cole's heyday was probably a little bit before our time of regularly watching Premier League football and understanding the quality of a player, he is locked off in that position as the next person to get inducted into the 2024 class. As Marley says, as Joel says, someone who scored goals like they were going out of fashion. A great striker. But who else? Who else? Who gets that final spot? You've mentioned strikers like Michael Owen, who's also in this shortlist. Robbie Fowler is there. Jermaine Defoe is there. I do think that Andrew Cole is the pick of those strikers, even though Michael Owen was incredible in the early stages of his career, won a Ballon d'Or. There are some other more recent players, let's just say, on this shortlist, and I wonder whether recency bias might creep into it. You've got David Silva, who was amazing for Manchester City, along with Yaya Toure, who's also nominated. Those two players, absolutely crucial in changing Manchester City from the side who are up and coming to the powerhouse that they are in the Premier League today. Eden Hazard, who only retired earlier this season, he's up with a nomination as well. So in terms of recency bias, there are some more contemporary players.
Yeah, I was just thinking then, it's crazy how there's one Ballon d'Or winner on that sheet, and yet he's almost, I don't want to say disregarded, but because of the personality he is in the media now, I feel like a lot of people forget just how bloody good he was.
Yeah, he was class. Like, but again, I think the longevity thing.
Yeah, 100% it is. It plays a factor.
It's probably discounting him, because when he went to Real Madrid, it didn't work. Came back to Newcastle, they got relegated. Went to Stoke, went to Manchester United, scored a couple of important goals, but was never first choice. After he left the Premier League in 2004 or 5, when he came back, he wasn't the same player. And I think that that's probably why Michael Owen isn't thought of as fondly as someone like an Andrew Cole, who stayed the course in the Premier League for the most part and scored goals wherever he went.
Yep, 100%. It is the longevity thing. It was a bit of a flash in the pan over, 2-3 years, I guess, at Liverpool during that World Cup as well. But I'm stuck between two players who I choose next, because if you're going to be objective, the best player on that list is Eden Hazard. Like 100%, nobody comes close.
Better than David Silva?
100%.
Yaya Toure?
Yeah, 100%. It's not even a case, I don't think.
You mean in terms of raw talent, or you mean in terms
of... Even what he achieved, like he won so many Premier Leagues with Chelsea, but I think
David
everyone...
David Silva won so many.
He did. I mean, I'm not disregarding them as if they're poor, but I mean, side by side, Hazard is probably, if not... a top three in terms of talent the Premier League's ever seen. Everyone forgets just how bloody good he was in that Chelsea side. And I hate to say this, and I was trying not to say his name, but it's going to have to be John Terry, isn't it? Because as much as I despise him, to be one of the biggest leaders in a Jose Mourinho side, to achieve that, what, 16 goals conceded in a season, to win the Champions League with them, to be one of the big names in the Ancelotti
side. He was
side.
Never there for the Champions League. He was
He had the kit on and jumped on. But I mean, he was a pivotal part of going towards that. And, you know, he was part of every single top Chelsea side. The Ancelotti one, the Jose one. It's hard to discount.
I mean, I'm surprised you've not gone for Nemanja Vidic, though, because you're his number one fan,
Forget that, Jesus.
But the other defenders that are up for nomination are Gary Neville, who I think has not done himself any favours because of how he talked down about himself on Sky Sports or on commentary.
He's very self-deprecating, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, absolutely. But he's won as many Premier Leagues as anyone, at least anyone I can think of. In the Premier League era, he's won title after title after title, the Champions League twice. I mean, I know he's a right back and he was no thrills, but in terms of his trophy cabinet, it's absolutely heaving. It's as busy as anyone's trophy cabinet I can think of in the history of the Premier League, and that is saying something. Sol Campbell will no doubt see his ass if he doesn't get inducted into the Hall of Fame. But he was part of the he was part of the Invincibles team. So, you know, he deserves a shout. So yeah, defenders wise, you still think it's John Terry out of that crop, which includes Campbell, Neville and Vidic?
It's got to be. I mean, that achievement of conceding that amount of goals and cleaning up the Premier League the way they did in those couple of years. And then he did it again in a new era and a new era. And he was the main guy in every single one in defence. It's hard. And I despise him as a person. I despise him as a player. But if I'm going to be really impartial, it actually probably has to be him, doesn't it?
So you think Hazard is the most gifted of all of those players, but you think...
He's the best player there. He's the best player, 100%. I think the latter stage of his career have almost made us forget just how special he was. I mean, that season when Mourinho came back and under Conte as well, unbelievable. Like, I've never seen such impressive seasons from a player before.
Now, I don't want to drag this into a debate which could last another 45 minutes, but you know when people have the Messi against Ronaldo debate and Messi's more of a pure footballer where he'll drag players left and right, he'll skin three players, he'll dribble through, dummy pass one, slot it into the corner or chip the goalkeeper and he just scores a majestic goal, a beautiful goal. And then there are the people that prefer Ronaldo, who is just a goal-scoring machine. Doesn't matter whether he's 20 yards out or 2 yards out. The ball is going in the back of the net. Headers, left foot, right foot, shrugging off defenders, that sort of thing. Stepovers and all of that in his early days. But more what he was remembered for at Real Madrid was just being a pure goal scorer. And people say, I prefer Messi because of this. I prefer Ronaldo because of this. Hazard was one of those players that scored goals like Messi scored goals. I don't mean as good as Messi. I'm not saying that at all. But I just mean in terms of the dragging defenders all over the place, running through. I can think of a couple of times where he's basically taken on an entire defence on his own and scored an important goal for Chelsea.
Wasn't the one against Arsenal where he basically wore one of them as a backpack for about 10 yards?
It was Francis Coquelin, I remember. He shrugged
Coquelin,
him off.
Yeah. Coquelin was trying his hardest to just chop him and he just wore him. He was like, come on then, we'll go for a run. He just sat him on that, like... Didn't he have like a famously fat bum, Hazard? He just put his bum into him and just...
Well,
went,
yeah, I was just about to say, Yaya Toure would have voted for Hazard because he had an infamous interview.
I mean, if it was a Hall of Fame for the biggest arse in the Premier League, you've got two big contenders there. So, it's a shame John McGinn is
John McGinn.
In the running.
Sol Campbell would fancy that one as well.
all right, okay. So if Joel's going for John Terry as his final pick, we've all agreed on... Andrew Cole to go alongside Ashley Cole. So we've got a double Cole. Are you picking someone different or do you think it should be John Terry as well, Marley?
Can we all agree that Jermaine Defoe has won a competition to be in the same category as all these lot? As good as he was, he's not Hazard, Toure, you know, John Terry, David Silva, Michael Owen, these types of players. So he's comfortably the one that isn't getting a pick until there's 28 more players going into this Hall of Fame. But I think if I'm hard pushed, Terry's probably the one for me. He had longevity. He was always, you know, I think he came into the Chelsea team as a teenager. I always remember actually he wore number 26, and it was because he wanted he wanted to sit next to Gianfranco Zola in the when he broke into the team, because Zola wore 25 and he wanted to sit next to him in the dressing room. But those eras seem way different. John Terry's era seems way later than Gianfranco Zola's, but because he started so young and was in the team from an early age, and he was there till the very end. Yeah, he was cringe as a person, and he's still cringe now.
Do you remember when he came off on his final game on the 26th minute?
Yeah.
I just gagged for a little bit just then.
Was that for Aston Villa or for Chelsea?
Chelsea.
Because he played for Aston Villa, didn't he, afterwards? Which I think people forget.
Yeah.
It was his final game at the Bridge. I'm sure it was for Chelsea. Oh, that made me sick.
Terry's going in then?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think David Silva...
Who would be both of your, like, the next ones, your top two?
Right, I personally don't think John Terry gets in ahead of Gary Neville. Now, John Terry was a better player and a better defender than Gary Neville. But Gary Neville, 400 Premier League games for Manchester United, 85 England caps, 7 Premier Leagues, 3 FA Cups, 3 League Cups, 3 Community Shields, 2 Champions Leagues and a Club World Cup. Gary Neville has to be in the Hall of Fame. He has to be in. That's my choice. And not because he's a better player than Silva or Hazard or Touré, or I don't think he was a better defender than Sol Campbell or a better defender than John Terry. But because he was a mainstay of that Manchester United team, captained the side later in his career as well, and because of what he's gone on to do in the media and be quite self-deprecating, like you say, Joel, people forget the achievements that he has under his name. 7 Premier League titles, 400 games, 2 Champions League. I mean, come on.
The thing is with this, it's a Hall of Fame and there's no ranking in it. But we rank it in order because that's just human nature, isn't it? Who goes in first? Like, if they hadn't put Alan Shearer in first, you know, Newcastle fans would have burnt down the Premier League headquarters. But at the end of the day, they're all equal in this Hall of Fame. But we are putting way more on like who's in there first type of thing. I don't agree. I don't think Neville was more deserving than some of the other players on this list, purely because he wasn't as good. But it is what it is. They all deserve to be there in that list, with the possible exception of Jermaine Defoe. And maybe Michael Carrick, he could probably fight, but he's also one of the most underrated players in Premier League history, Michael Carrick. So, you know, it's for me, if it wasn't Terry, I'd probably go for David Silva, I think, just about, because again, of just bare talent. Try and get the ball off David Silva, like, you're just not getting it off him. They all deserve it, don't they? But we like a good argument. It's human nature.
It certainly is. Well, let us know what you think in terms of who should join Ashley Cole in the Premier League Hall of Fame. Should it be Andrew Cole, John Terry, Gary Neville, or someone else? You can get in touch via social media. The links are in the description. And we'll put the question in the Telegram group as well and see what you guys think of it in the group chat. And if you haven't joined the group chat, what are you waiting for? It's free to join. Click the link in the description, download the app for free, and come and join the conversation where we talk about all sorts of stuff. More often than not, profit and sustainability rules recently, which is a bit of a shame. So let's liven things up with a little chat about who deserves to be in the Premier League Hall of Fame. Bit sad that Matty Taylor didn't get nominated. There's always the 2054 Premier League Hall of Fame.
Well, they're going to have. So they've got Premier League Hall of Fame, which is for players. They must open wings off it, you know, like goal Hall of Fame. Matty Taylor's in with more than a shout of getting in that one.
How Messi's been nominated for the Ballon d'Or this year as well, by the way, is... I don't even want to go
there. It's another conversation for another podcast.
Another podcast. And you can join us for the next podcast by hitting subscribe or follow wherever you listen to your shows. And if you do that, that way you'll never miss an episode of Football Social Daily again. That is it from myself, Marley and Joel, though, for today on Football Social Daily. We'll catch you on the next one. See you then.
Football Social Daily is a VoiceWorks sport production for the Sport Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.